There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome back to the Psych Legal Pop podcast. This is a podcast where we talk about popular culture through the lens of an attorney and a therapist. I'm Brooke Brigham. I'm the attorney.
And I'm Tess Brigham. I'm the therapist.
So today we are going to be talking about the docuseries Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV. Before we get into that, we just wanted to make a couple of announcements. If you haven't already heard, we now are on Patreon.
Woo!
So if you enjoy us, then head over to Patreon for more of us.
Of more, yes.
Where we get more personal. We talk about our lives. We have some sister squabbles.
Oh, yeah. If you listen to the Patreon that went out, I was supposed to go out today. I accidentally pushed the button. It went out yesterday. To tell you how technologically savvy I am, but you get to listen to us fight, and then we get to listen to us fight, and then talk about us visiting our dad and me harassing our father about God, about death and God,
death and dying.
Everyone's favorite topic. And then we talk about Kate Middleton.
We had a Kate Middleton.
Good times.
Kate Middleton update.
Yes.
Some other pop culture items. So
if you want more of that.
We also do once a month. Well, we have a weekly bonus episode where we talk about all that stuff. Then we do a monthly true crime bonus episode and a monthly Ask Us Anything episode where you can ask for legal advice, you can ask for therapy advice, and we'll do our best to, you know, answer your questions. So head on over to patreon.com. It should be linked in, you know, whatever, wherever you're finding this, will be the link to the Patreon. And also, if you just want to support our podcast in general, a great thing to do would be to subscribe to the podcast so you automatically have it downloaded into your queue every time a new episode comes out. And if you feel inclined to give us a 5-star rating, that also helps the podcast.
Yes, so it does.
Any level of support that you are comfortable giving, please do.
Okay.
I'm going to give a little synopsis of what this docuseries is about. Again, it's called Quiet on Set, Dark Side of Kids TV. And this is it's an ongoing 5-part documentary television series. 4 parts are out now, but the 5th part is supposed to come out April 7th.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. And you can find it on Investigation Discovery, which I guess is part of the Discovery Channel. It's also on Max and Discovery Plus. Mm-hmm. So this 5-part documentary television series details the behind-the-scenes world of children's television from the late 1990s to the early 2010s. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Especially during the time of Dan Schneider's tenure as a producer on Nickelodeon. The series covers the rise at Nickelodeon of Dan Schneider, who was accused of fostering a hostile work environment. Former actress Alexa Nicholas appears, detailing her experience working in the series Zoe 101. That's also the series that Britney Spears' younger sister, Jamie Lynn?
Mm-hmm.
Jamie Lynn Spears was on. Former cast and crew members of All That and The Amanda Show and other Nickelodeon shows appear as well. In the 3rd episode, Drake Bell of Josh and Drake reveals that he was sexually abused by a former Nickelodeon dialogue coach named Brian Peck. No relationship to Bell's Drake and Josh co-star Josh Peck. Peck was arrested and charged in 2003 for child sexual abuse, but the victim's name had been sealed. Letters to the presiding judge in support of Peck were also revealed, including from actors James Marsden, Kimmy Robertson, Taron Killam, Alan Thicke, Joanna Kearns, Ryder Strong, and Will Friedle, along with director Rich Corell. Another sexual abuser, production assistant Jason Michael Handy, described himself as a pedophile full-blown, while also sending a sexually explicit photograph to a former child actress. In 2018, in the wake of the Me Too movement, Viacom's CBS interviewed dozens of employees regarding their experiences with Dan Schneider. Although the review found no sexual misconduct by Schneider, the employees expressed that Schneider was controlling and verbally abusive towards them. Afterwards, Schneider parted ways from the network. During that time, producer Mary Robinson, producer of this documentary, noticed a string of viral videos showcasing inappropriate scenes from Dan Schneider produced shows. One video she noted was of Ariana Grande as Kat Valentine from Victorious pouring water on her face while lying upside down. Another clip depicted Jamie Lynn Spears in an episode of Zoe 101 getting viscous liquid squirted onto her face. Robertson thought that the two clips evoked pornographic imagery. So this is what spurred the investigation into Nickelodeon and into Dan Schneider. And wow, it went down a rabbit hole.
Yes. Yes, it did. So, and then I watched, do we want to get into that now? The response from Dan Schneider, because that was fascinating.
Yeah. So in response to, well, I don't know, maybe we should go through some of the allegations or some of the things that came out in this docuseries documentary.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about Dan Schneider's response. But
okay.
You know what this reminded me of? You know, remember when we watched, you know, like The Secrets of Playboy or, you
yeah.
know, when we watch any of these documentaries about something that is an institution
mm-hmm.
in pop culture and entertainment or whatever, and you go, oh my God.
Yeah.
What was I like? Hello, where were we? And, you know, Playboy goes back, you know, many decades. You can kind of say, okay, well, back then people didn't really know. But we're talking about not that long ago. We're talking about the 90s and the aughts, or, you know,
yeah.
the 2010. I don't know what you call the 2010 decade.
What, you know, yeah, I think that one thing that's very interesting about this as I was watching this is that for you and I, you know, our experience with these shows and Nickelodeon is a little bit different, right? We're not millennials. We're not, you know, we're so in the late 90s, we were both, you were in law school. I was working like yeah, these shows, all that. And those shows were not catered to us. I wasn't watching Nickelodeon. And then, so I didn't know any of these shows. I barely knew who Amanda Bynes was. You know, I didn't know who any of these people were. And then I discovered Nickelodeon shows again when my son kind of got into it. And I think, I feel like the first kind of Nickelodeon show that we watched on a regular basis was that Sam and Cat.
Yes.
With Ariana Grande. Because I think my son Max had a thing for Ariana. He said, Ariana Grande. That's how he would say her name. And we would watch that show and I knew of Dan Schneider. I knew he and Brian Rob, I remember Head of the Class, cause those were my years, you know, those were like when I was in high school, that show was on, and I knew sort of vaguely that he had gone off and done these Nickelodeon shows. But so this really wasn't our era. So yeah. It was interesting to kind of watch this and hear this take from all these kids about like, and just watching, going on TikTok and watching all these, you know, young people talk about their experience, you know, talking about like, I watched this and I didn't realize this. And, but you're right that I didn't pick up on a lot of this when I was watching this as a 35, 36 year old woman. And I was watching these shows with my son, and I wasn't really picking up on it, but it is so, it's clear as day now when you really look at it.
Well, yeah. And I have to say, so my daughter was born in 2003. She watched like iCarly mm-hmm. and Victorious and then Sam and Cat. And there was another one that was a spinoff of that, you know, with like Ariana Grande, Jeanette McCurdy. Is it McCurdy or
yeah.
McCurdy, I think. She watched all those shows, and I asked her about this. Because when my daughter would watch these shows, I was off doing something else, cooking dinner, doing laundry. You know what I mean? Like I mm-hmm. was not paying attention to the show. Mm-hmm. You know, she was being babysat by the television.
Yeah.
So I wasn't looking at it at all. And so I asked her yesterday, I said, did you understand all of these things? And she said, no, it went over my head. Mm. She said she didn't get the sexual stuff because there's a lot of stuff with like hot dogs and pickles and, you know, and phallic shaped things and the squirting of things like ejaculation, you know, whatever. She said that totally went over my head. I mm-hmm. had no idea. And I was like, oh, well, thank God, you know, but yeah, this was not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so she kind of was at the tail end of it, not in the beginning. She says she never watched like that Drake and Josh or, you know, all that or those shows. That was before her time.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a little shocked. I was kind of like, wait a minute, where are we? Like, didn't we know better in?
No, we didn't.
In the 90s?
No. We didn't. We didn't know better. We didn't know better in the 90s. We didn't know better in the aughts. We barely know better now. We're barely hanging on by a thread.
This is so discouraging.
Now, I mean, you know, it took until 2017 when the Me Too movement came up for this guy to be ousted. I mean, he was the reigning king there for 20 years. And his behavior was, you know, co-signed by Nickelodeon, by Paramount, Viacom, all of them for years and years and years. They were fine with it, you know, as long as he continued to make money. So, I mean, I have a thing here I saw on Slate.
Mm-hmm.
They listed out, you know, all of the every allegation in the explosive new docuseries about the dark side of children's TV. And so a big one was the first one being the inappropriate jokes. That's what you talked about. The second one was this made me livid, was the Amanda show, The Writer's Room, which they got two female writers
right.
from the writer's room. We meet them. Their names were Christy Stratton and Jenny Kilgan. And basically, these are two women who had never, they were writers. They were struggling. They get this call. They're told that they get this gig, but they have to share a salary. So there's one salary and that's they have crazy. To share it, which
that
is,
shows you how desperate people are in
yes.
Hollywood.
Yes.
Just to work on a show.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And the other thing is that the salary is probably much better than what they were making temping. Like the salaries are good. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, you know, people are desperate. And so they are so excited and they get in there and very quickly Dan does all the shit that, you know, men do that is like women aren't funny, you know, putting porn on, you know, yeah. watching porn all the time. Yeah, give me a back rub. And then like, you know, at one point it was like, tell the story and then tell it as if you're being sodomized over the table. And like her, she's saying no, no, no. And like, do it, do it, do it. A lot of this Louis C.K. shit. Mm-hmm. And one of the women ended up suing and basically lost her career for it. And this mm-hmm. is exactly the crap that Louis C.K. did. And this is exactly the stuff that keeps this stuff going. And this is it exactly, which is you spend your entire life dreaming of being a writer, being a performer, being anything. You finally get there. You get that job. You finally do it. And you're there. And you feel like, if I say anything, it's all going to go away. Right. And just it's like, all
and the,
over.
And the talent, too, because they talked about how any parent
yes.
who spoke up and said, hey, this isn't cool, their kid was fired from the show.
Yeah, we meet that one kid. Yeah. I forgot his name. Was his name Brian? He says very clearly he's a young Black kid. And well, he's not young anymore, but like on the show he is.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, my dream was to get my family out of the hood. I thought I was making it happen. And his mother was the one saying, hey, why do you have the one Black kid on the cast being the drug dealer? Right.
Or I mean, that's the one. Didn't they put him in that penis?
Yes. Outfit? Yes. Making him feel very uncomfortable yeah. and very clearly that's what it is. And not taking that stuff into consideration at all. But and then, of course, the mom feels terrible. She feels like she's done something horrible. So, you know, so much of this is about power and control. And, you know, just from this is this big thing about Hollywood is that you've got all of these really beautiful people on one side, and then you've got a bunch of uggos on the other. I'm sorry. And the uggos are the writers, the directors, the agents, the whatever.
Well, just right? to qualify this, you worked in Hollywood.
Yes, I worked in Hollywood.
And Hollywood as an agent, as a manager.
Yeah. And the thing is that I will say that there were a ton of the men that I worked with. You know, the thing was that there were a lot of men that were not popular, that were, you know, and a lot of these writers, same thing, not popular, weren't popular with women, and they get a bit of power, and then it's just it becomes this thing where it's almost like they exact this revenge against everybody in their lives that they felt like didn't appreciate them or didn't see them. So every pretty girl, every, you know, big man on campus, everybody. And in LA, you know, power and who you know and what. The big thing then was like, who is going to pick up your call? Who will answer the phone? And so the ability to get someone on the phone, that power is tremendous. So to lose someone like Dan Schneider, who has all this power, it is, you know, yeah, he can with just one phone call, just destroy everything.
Yeah.
And that was the same with Harvey Weinstein and all of them.
Yeah. And I have to say that there's also something about, okay, now, people don't take this the wrong way. I'm not trying to say that all adults who work with children have these motivations, but if an adult is interested in, you know, taking advantage of a child, they put themselves in spaces where there are children.
Yeah. And that's okay? That has always been a problem.
Right. So whether it's a coach or a teacher, and again, this is not everything I'm saying that, mm-hmm. but pedophiles put themselves in places where children are so yes. they can get access to children. And I feel like that's a lot of what's happening with these child actors, because this is not a new phenomenon. We can go back to Corey Haim and Corey, who's the
Feldman.
Other Corey? Corey Feldman. Feldman. We can go back to the Coreys. God, we can go back to like so many young men and women, child stars.
Mm-hmm.
This is always
Patty been. Duke. Was it? I mean, I feel like you can go back to the beginning of time, right? I think all of them had some yeah. sort of experience.
Exactly. And you know, they're very vulnerable, and a lot of times they're supporting their entire family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their income supports their entire family. And you know, it's a horrible situation to be in, and it
yeah.
rarely goes well.
And so, and you're right. And this is the part, and I've thought about this often, which is, so here's the thing, right? Children, we need to tell stories and have things that have children in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there needs to be children's entertainment. So we can't just not have children in anything. And we need to have, you know, things out there for children. So we need to have teachers and coaches and all this kind of stuff. And this is the part that's so hard about all of this is that there are, you know, we need to have this for kids. And at the same time, it's almost like, there are predators swimming. It's like being in an ocean and there's predators swimming around. And so how do we protect kids? Like, how do we know which are the ones that, you know, really truly are here for the right reasons and who here aren't? But you're absolutely right. And I think it always comes back to this idea of, you know, no 40-year-old man should ever be that interested in you, should be that interested in spending time with you, that it should never be like
well,
that.
Well, and we saw like Drake Bell's father, who was very involved.
Yes, and to, he knew.
To
he
the
knew.
Point where he was on the set every day. He knew. He was, you know, protecting his son. But then as soon as his son got old enough to be able to say, you know, to have some say in his life, this... the Peck guy,
was Brian.
Brian Peck, you know, zooms in and he brainwashes the mom and says, oh, you know, the dad is doing this and this and that. And then the mom gets custody, however it worked out. Basically, he was able to like sever that bond between Drake and his father. And then the father couldn't be there to protect him anymore. And then guess what started happening?
Yeah.
You know,
but. So here's the thing about that particular situation, right? So it's I am not directly blaming Dan Schneider or Viacom or anybody, right? Obviously, Viacom, Paramount needed to have safeguards in place where you, but he wasn't a registered sex offender at that time. So how were they to know when they hired this acting coach, this very well-known, experienced vocal acting coach, how were they to know? But this is a bit of the problem, and this is the root of it, which is if Dan Schneider ran a set in which people felt safe, people felt like they could talk to each other, that they could come to each other, and where Dan was the kind of person where he would take things in and hear you and hear what you had to say, if everyone felt like, yeah, your thoughts and feelings will be taken into consideration, I feel like this would not have happened. I really do. I feel like...
But who knew about it? Okay, so what ended up happening was Brian Peck is, you know, taking Drake on these auditions and saying, oh, it's too late for me to drive you all the way back to your home in Orange County. So you can just stay the night at my house. And he's doing this and he's sexually assaulting him at his house. Who other than... Did anyone else know about it that would be able to report it? I don't think anybody else knew.
But my point is this, and maybe there was nothing that could have stopped this. But my point is this, is that imagine if it was a more supportive set. If it had been a more supportive set, if there had been that, then Dan Schneider would have been more willing to listen to Drake's father. Drake's father would have a little bit more like instead of Dan being like, I'm the master here, I'm not never going to listen to the parents. Dan would have listened to dad. He would have said, huh, you have something that's interesting. That is interesting. That is weird. If Dan was thinking about something other than getting a back rub and thinking about, but do you see what I'm saying? Like, it's the mindset. If you're sitting there thinking about what is best, How do I care for and what is best for these actors and these young people that are supporting my livelihood? And you notice that one of your actors is that the father is coming to you and saying, you know, I think this is a very bizarre relationship. And now this guy has come in and he swooped in. Yeah. I mean, come on. It took the girlfriend's mother.
Oh, God.
The girlfriend's mother saw one moment. And she was able to get in there and figure it out. That's what I'm saying. When someone is paying attention and when someone cares and when someone has some sense of it, you would figure that out. And that's my point. Someone that cares, someone that's paying attention, you can see how these dominoes can fall very easily.
Right.
Where if it, you know, and I don't, I, you know, the blame, all of the blame falls all on Brian Peck. He is the predator. He is all of those things. So I'm not here to blame, you know, and say that, you know, all of these people are at fault or to blame Drake's mother. I'm sure his parents feel such horrible. I mean, the father, that was heartbreaking, such horrible guilt for all of that. But at the same time, I think you really do need to take a step back and ask yourself, like, if the father, right, the father knew. So if the father had been listened to, maybe someone would have intervened.
Yeah.
Or Amanda Bynes is another story, right?
I see your point that, you know, if Dan Schneider thought about anybody else other than himself, you know, like if a parent comes to him with a concern, he would at least look into it, investigate it. But he didn't because, look, all he cared about was this well-oiled machine that he had where he's churning out these shows and churning out these child stars. And he doesn't care about anybody but himself. But that was amazing. That mother. So Drake Bell eventually gets a girlfriend and he's at the girlfriend's house and there's a phone call or something or some interaction where he's talking to Brian Peck and the mom just knew that there was something strange about the reaction that he
had. Once Drake got this girlfriend, he's like, well, as much as I could, I spent all this time with the girlfriend. Like, I just avoided him, avoided going to his house, going anywhere near him. And then apparently he had made these plans to go to Disneyland with Brian one day. And he basically flaked on him and was like, I can't go. I don't want to go. Or he was avoiding him. And so this Brian Peck.
Oh, he showed up?
He started calling. Yeah. Like, and you have to think about what this is. He's not calling a cell phone. This is, you know,
landline.
He's calling a landline. He's calling the landline of the girlfriend's family. Right. So this is someone you don't even know. That's desperate. And he's calling and he's calling and he's calling. And Drake talked to him and hung up. And then he's calling and calling and calling. And the mom was like, no. No 40-year-old man wants to go to Disneyland with a kid this badly. Come on. That's insane. Mm. So that's my point. My point is you can see the ripple effects of how when you have someone here at the tippy-tippy top who doesn't do their job and doesn't do it well, right? You can see how it affects everybody else. It's like generational trauma. It's like, you know, one person doesn't keep, you know, one person has all this trauma and then everybody in the family, boom, 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 boom.
But aren't
you know, after over and over again.
Yeah. Aren't they supposed to have, okay. So these minors, they have to go to school certain number of hours a day. I mean, don't they have like teachers there on set? Weren't there other people there? There's nobody there. There's nothing. There's no something akin to a social worker or a psychologist or somebody who's on site. These are children.
Yeah. Well, no, they have to have a teacher and they have to have a certain number of hours. But think about it like this. Again, the teacher is being paid by... Yeah. Is by being paid by Nickelodeon. The teacher wants gigs. This is a good gig for the teacher. The teacher wants to keep this gig. So Dan goes to the teacher and says, hey, I'm going to pull Amanda for a few hours. Can you fudge in and write down that she did 3 hours today? It'll be fine. We'll make it up later. It's okay. What are you going to do? Argue with that? You've seen Dan rage. You don't want to lose your job. Right. So of course are you going to stand up to that? No. You know, that's what I'm saying. It's like every single person, nobody felt safe to ever say anything or push back because they couldn't. So, of course, and that was the same thing. That's what they're saying about like the laws. Yeah, technically, these kids needed to go home by a certain time. But, you know, the parents couldn't say anything. They couldn't say anything. So they were trapped. They were absolutely trapped.
Yeah. So Amanda Bynes, let's talk about her for a second.
Yeah.
She was someone who was particularly focused on, God, I don't even know what to say about her. We all know that later in life, she appeared to have a lot of mental health struggles. I think her parents got a conservatorship over her. You know, she was literally just sort of wandering around LA in a bad wig and,
I think Dan felt like he discovered her, right? He found her, you know, at some, you know, why can't I think of the name of at some comedy show, right. You know, when she was 10, and he brings her, the Laugh Factory, when, and so he brings her on All That, which is like a Saturday Night Live for kids. He brings her on that show. She's a hit. She then develops the Amanda Show. They do that. And so then Amanda becomes this big star, and she wants to now start doing these more adult shows. And the adult show that she was going to do is What I Like About You with Jenny Garth from 90210, mm-hmm. which was over at the WB. And it was only there for a couple years. And I kind of like at the end of my time in Hollywood, that show was being developed. I kind of vaguely remember it. And I know that the show had a tremendous amount of problems, but that was the other thing too, was Dan was like, you know, he was a little too into her, and he felt, I think, a lot of, he felt a lot of ownership over her. And also, I think that he also, I get the sense that he also wanted to break into more adult, like writing for adult shows. Mm-hmm. I think he also wanted to be in the adult business. Yeah. I think he thought, oh, well, Amanda and I will do this show, and then we'll do another show, and then I'll be on, you know, I'll be doing HBO Sunday Night Television soon. And I think it sounds like he was not wanted and not there, or maybe he pulled a lot of the crapola that he pulled at Nickelodeon on that set. And they were like, what are you doing?
Right.
Like, no, you're not a god here. So enough.
He's like a big man, baby. Yeah. So what Layla told me that this was a while ago. I think this was when Amanda was going through her struggles, that she posted on social media. I think it was maybe an Instagram post, like her own account. She made a post that said, I had to get an abortion at, I don't know if it was 13 or 17. I've seen reports of both, because mm-hmm. my employer raped me.
Yeah, I've seen this going around. And I've seen this going around that people think this is Dan Schneider.
Yeah, and they made her, well, I don't know if it's Dan Schneider or this other guy.
Allegedly.
All this is all alleged.
Alleged.
Or Brian Peck. I guess Brian Peck was not into women. But then, and they made her take it down. She did, but then she got some account with a different name, and then she put it back up, and then they told her to take it. Like, it was this thing. She was crying out for help. She was like mm-hmm. trying to telegraph a message mm-hmm. to somebody. So I guess that would be Dan Schneider, because I don't think the other guy, that was not his thing, you know?
Oh yeah. It wouldn't have been that Brian Peck. It would have been Dan, or maybe another, maybe a mucky muck at Nickelodeon, Paramount, Viacom. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It could have been someone else. I don't know. But it was obviously like we saw on the show these moments where, you know, they're in a hot tub together. She's in a bathing suit. Yeah. He's fully dressed, but, you know, it's very odd and awkward.
He inserts himself into all these scenes and these questions, you know, these sexual innuendo scenes and all the stuff with the anything phallic and the, you know, squirting and mm-hmm. he wasn't even subtle about it.
Yeah.
You
know? And that's the thing. And I think this is why he landed in kids television is that he's got the humor of a, mm-hmm. you know, 12-year-old, 11-year-old boy who's never developed beyond that of an unsophisticated boy. And so it's a little bit like, ew, you know, when you see this grown man acting like this.
Yeah.
But yeah, poor Amanda has been through it. And then when you see these old things of her, you know, it's really hard, you know, to watch it, because she was very talented. You know, she was this young, talented, beautiful young woman who really was on the precipice. And you do feel terrible if she had someone else besides Dan Schneider, you know, and it doesn't seem like, I think that the parents have been blamed for a lot. I don't get the sense that the parents are really, you know, terrible, because apparently she wanted to get emancipated because she had some boyfriend she wanted to spend time with. And it's a little bit like, you know, yeah, I'm with the parents. You shouldn't be hanging out with some older guy when you're 16.
But I read that Schneider was involved in helping her to get emancipated. It's like,
yeah,
why are you doing that?
Yeah.
Why is this any of your business? And
Or why aren't you? He's not a parent himself, is he? I mean, it's a little bit like, why aren't you working with her parents? You know, why aren't you helping? Like, if she's got this older boyfriend, why aren't you working with? And they are, you know, why aren't you working with them on like, how do we help Amanda with this, you know, get her away from this older boyfriend? It's just as opposed to her being able to work more. Right.
Well, yeah, so he wanted her emancipated. So, yeah, she could just work for him all the time and do whatever he wanted her to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then the other victim, well, there's a lot of victims.
There's lots of victims.
But, you know, Drake Bell, I mean, he, you know, was, you know, sexually assaulted. Sounds like very
violently sexually
assaulted for several years and, you know, has struggled ever since.
Yeah.
And, you know, has had problems with alcohol. And he actually said he was on a podcast, a Sarah Fraser podcast recently, where he said that after he watched the premiere of this documentary, he went straight to rehab.
Oh gosh.
Cause it just sent him like, mm-hmm. you know, just reliving it and then seeing it and then all the fallout and, you know, people are reaching out and saying, you know, and all these people who are saying, well, God, I didn't know. And all those celebrities who wrote character references for Brian Peck. And now they're mm-hmm. like, well, I didn't know. And it's just like, does anybody ask questions or think critically about any of this? You know, like, why
yeah.
don't you write a letter for someone who is being sentenced for child abuse, for sexual child abuse, you know?
Yeah.
Like, why in the hell, Joanna Kearns?
Yeah. Okay.
Something that you felt was important. It makes no sense to me.
So here's my question. So you're watching, it would be one thing if I knew somebody professionally and they were being accused of something and nothing's come out yet. Nothing's come out yet. And they're like, can you come and support me? But yeah, this is the part that I didn't quite understand, because all of these people, Joanna Kearns included, she said, well, I didn't know. I didn't know the whole story. I was told one thing. And I was like, but
well, then don't write a letter.
But he was already convicted.
Yes.
He was already convicted. So he was found guilty and he pled to it. So, but I think the story that he told people was, I'm innocent, but I'm really going to plead guilty to this thing, but I'm being set up. Like, I think he told all of his cronies that I'm going to plead guilty so that I don't get a bigger sentence, but this is really, I'm being set up and blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, you're right. It's that question of, do you ever stop and ask yourself a question of like, would an innocent person ever plead guilty? I don't know. I don't know if I could ever, especially for a crime like sex against a child. Sex against a child? Like, you know, yeah, there's some other crimes that maybe.
Yeah, like speeding. I don't know.
I don't know. Something that you're like, okay, I cannot fight this, or I'm not going to. It's not worth my time or energy. But that's one where I don't know. Like this, he made it seem like there was some giant conspiracy theory against him.
Mm-hmm.
Psych Legal Pop will be back after these messages. Hey there, it's Tess Brigham, the therapist half of Psych Legal Pop. In addition to being a therapist, I'm also a coach, speaker, and author. And if you go to my website, you'll find courses, ebooks, and worksheets for sale. If you're feeling a bit lost, overwhelmed by life's twists and turns, or you're just simply stuck, I've got you covered. Head over to my website, www.tessbrigham.com, for courses, ebooks, and worksheets tailored to help you unlock your true potential. From relationship struggles to career transitions, I'm here to guide you every step of the way. So stop looking outside of yourself at friends, family, social media for the answers. The answers to all your questions are inside of you. My products and services are the first step in uncovering your true you. I'm not quite sure what any of those people were thinking when they wrote that letter. And that was the other thing I was wondering too, is you were all in court together. No? Or were the, was he there and then he was hearing the letters? So Joanna Kearns and Alan Thicke weren't actually in court. They were just reading the letters. Okay.
No, I think they just
I was a little confused.
They weren't, they just sent the letters
in. They just sent the letters in. You know,
they sent them to the, like the probation department, because what happens is after, you know, you're convicted or you plead guilty, then the probation department makes like a sentencing report and they do a report for the judge saying if you have any priors and there's any mitigating factors or aggravating factors. And people can, you know, write letter character letters on your behalf and they can include that and whatever. Also victim impact statements. Mm-hmm. So they're just compiling, you know, each side has the right to compile whatever information they think is relevant.
Yeah. But did you see that video that they showed of Brian Peck with a very young Leonardo DiCaprio?
Oh, yeah. And he was sort of rubbing.
And how much he was touching him.
Inappropriately.
Like, yeah. I'm sorry, but I don't know if I ever touch anybody. like, when is the last time you have touched somebody that is not your own child that much? Ever? Well, like, I don't think that I've ever touched, like, any of my son's friends. When he had friends, when he was younger, like any, do you know what I mean? Like I would
hug my daughter's friends, but
would you like caress them?
No, but it's always if they had come to me, if they approach me and want to hug me,
yeah,
I will hug them. But I would never like assume anyone wants a hug from me.
But that's a lot of what we saw with Dan Schneider of like coming up to someone and giving them a hug and like putting your arm around them and doing that kind of stuff. It's like, would you ever in a workplace do that? And would you ever do that with an
adult child?
A child? I mean, that's the part that I think is so bizarre. Like, never, not once have I ever thought of approaching someone and putting my arms around them in a workplace situation. Even family members, I don't even do that.
Yeah, we barely hug our parents. I mean, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, like a side hug. But, yeah, but you know, I don't know. Some of these, I remember... Like some of these people who are in theater class, they can get a little touchy feely and they want and stuff. They're like, they're kind of in a different, but this is an adult and a child, especially. No, you do not touch a child.
Yeah.
That's not yours.
Yes.
Unless they want to hug you and it's an appropriate, you know, like congratulations, you graduated, you know, and, or, you know what I mean? Like something like that, but not just, oh, we're on the set. Let me like feel you up. No. No. So anyway, so before we get to what's his name? Schneider's response.
Yes.
Let's talk about Nickelodeon's response, which was.
Which was pretty much nothing.
Tepid at best. So they say now that Drake Bell has disclosed his identity as the plaintiff in the 2004 case, we are dismayed and saddened to learn of the trauma he has endured, and we commend and support the strength required to come forward. Okay, give me a break. Mm-hmm. They said they investigate all formal complaints as part of our commitment to fostering a safe and professional workplace environment, free of harassment or other kinds of inappropriate comment or inappropriate conduct. And another thing that... that Drake Bell said on the Sarah Fraser podcast, he said that that was a very empty response.
Yeah.
And he says, I have to pay for my own therapy. I have to figure out what, I mean, was there anything or any truth behind them actually caring? He's not really buying it either. And also the other Nickelodeon stars who, you know, we're part of this, you know, they're not really buying it either. Nobody's really buying it.
Yeah. Well, and also this is Viacom who employed Les Moonves for how many years and gave him a giant payday. And, you know, yeah, they give Dan Schneider a $7 million payout, which is actually kind of a low payout as payouts go.
Yeah.
And, you know, Drake Bell's just like, well, good luck with you. I hope everything works out. So, yeah. Let's talk.
Then, but also, just did we touch on the other guy who was the other?
Oh, I forgot his name. I can find it. But this was the first guy they talked about.
He was
okay. The production assistant, yeah. Jason Handy.
He also was convicted of sex crimes against children.
Well, yeah, they law enforcement. So it started off where he sent a photo of himself masturbating to a young girl in 2000. And then in 2003, his home was raided and they found an enormous trove of child pornography, including 10,000 images of children. Additionally, he had Ziploc bags with tokens of his relationships with children he knew, including the underwear of a 7-year-old girl. Ugh. Yeah. So, and then 4 months after Handy's arrest, Brian Peck, an actor turned dialogue coach who portrayed the character Pickle Boy and all that, was arrested. And he was pen pals with killer John Wayne Gacy.
Oh, that's right.
And then, you know, was arrested on 11 charges of child abuse related to a child actor. 11 charges.
But he only pled guilty, I think, to like a couple of those. I guess that was part of his plea deal.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it matters, I guess. I mean, you know, you're going to. Yeah. I mean,
yeah. It's 11 charges. I mean, but yeah, Joanna Kearns, like, yeah. You don't stop for a second and ask yourself, okay, how many charges? 11 charges? And what are you going to do? You're pleading to what? And what's the conspiracy that you want to tell me about that's happening here? But, and then in 2009, another worker at the Nickelodeon lot, Chanel, was convicted of abusing a boy on the lot in 2005. He also had a prior convictions as a sex offender. And so for that guy, he was a registered sex offender. Mm. He had violated. So that was on Viacom Paramount.
Yeah.
Because they did no background check on that guy before they hired him and let him be on the lot. And that was the other thing too, is the character Brian Peck played this guy, Pickle Boy, and they show you all of these images. There was a lot of these images of like pickles.
Ray Romano.
Yes. And the pickle going through the hole.
Like a glory hole.
Yeah. Through the door.
And then you have Ray Romano there, like eating a pickle, like he's, you know, giving it a blowjob or something. It's like, what the fuck is happening? I mean, Ray Romano, like,
yeah.
I sort of had, like, I thought you were okay. I mean, what the fuck?
Yeah, but I also wonder if Ray Romano even knows what's going on. Like, I feel like maybe Ray Romano's agent said to him, hey, you need more kids and come. And, you know, this is Paramount, Viacom. They also produce the Everyone Loves Raymond. Oh, come and do a thing for us, please.
Yeah,
okay, just
no.
Yeah. Join the set. They're gonna hand you a pickle. Okay, eat the pickle. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. For that kind of stuff, it's always a little tricky. But, and it's the same. It's, I don't blame these actors like Ariana Grande, right? Like, oh, take the potato and you're just going to squeeze the potato like this, right? And not really knowing. Oh, pour the water, you know?
Yeah, but at the time, she's like, what, 14, 15? You know, I don't know if that goes over a 14 or 15 year old's head, but the sickest thing about it is whether the kids watching or the kids on set really get it, the sickest thing is that it's all being done for Dan Schneider's pleasure.
Yes. Yeah.
Like he's getting off on this.
Mm-hmm. Of what can I get away with?
Yeah.
What can I do?
Can I make there's these kids
it's
do?
Yeah. It's gross. So it's
super gross. Okay.
So what is here's this, the response. And this is what's response? This is what's utterly fascinating about the response. So mind you, Dan Schneider, I'm sure, because there were some black box moments where Dan Schneider does respond to some of the allegations, right, in the thing. Dan Schneider could have had an interview with the producers. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they asked him.
Oh, they asked him. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Dan Schneider said no to that. Dan Schneider then agrees to, after it's over and he gets the response, to have a 20-minute interview with this guy, Boogie, who is, mind you, who is someone who once worked for him as a child.
Yeah, on iCarly.
So I want people to really understand the power dynamics here. He did not go to someone who was going to hold his feet to the fire, and the comments were turned off.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think that, oh, wow, Dan, what a brave guy. He's going to come and respond to these things. He's putting himself out there. No, no, no. He's still controlling the narrative. He picked someone that wasn't going to ask him any hard questions, wasn't going to challenge him. He picked someone with the power dynamic. And you and I both know, if I was interviewing someone that I once worked for when I was a kid, I would still have reverence towards them because that's the power dynamic. So let's just start there. That's where we're at. And so his responses to everything are just such milquetoast. So like if you take a step back and if you heard it, you might think, oh, Dan's saying the right things. Cause he's very much like, I'm very sorry if anyone felt terrible on my sets. Like I never meant to make anyone feel that way. You know, hearing that, you know, I feel terrible that these, you know, he's talking about those two women. I feel terrible that that happened. And then Boogie asks him, you know, okay, there was a story about splitting the things. And Dan goes into this whole thing of like, well, that's a very common practice where teams and pairs, and I've done this before. We've had two women. And then there was another time, hold on. There was another time where it was two men. And there was another time where it was a man and woman, but I have no negotiation over the salaries. And that was it. And then Boogie drops it.
Yeah, because that's actually a violation of the Writers Guild contract. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to point that out.
Yeah. So, but he drops that. But the next logical question after that would be, is the conversation that you had with, what was her name? Jenny. So Jenny claimed in the documentary that you called her up and yelled at her about her reporting this to the Writers Guild. Are you saying that didn't happen? Like no follow-up, no like confirming anything. It was just like dropped from then on out. And so it just kept going on like this. Like, you know, it was all about how he basically like, I'm the victim, you know, I'm a victim of all of this. Like, and his excuse for the way in which he treated people was this. He felt pressure. He felt pressure. He's like, you know, I felt, you know, if I treated people poorly, I felt a lot of pressure. I felt pressure to keep things going. And then there were times where I would see someone and maybe I wouldn't give my best to them. And I'm sorry for that. I'm sorry I didn't give you, you know, the best of me in those moments in time. And I was dismissive of you and I moved on. And this is what I want to say about this. We have all been under pressure in our lives. And listen, we've all been young and bitchy. And I am sure that when I felt full of myself and felt like I had a little bit of power or felt any of these things about myself, I am sure I have been bitchy and dismissive and any of those things. I have never been cruel. I have never been cruel. And that is the differentiator, which is this. We have all worked for bosses that were kind of rude, kind of mean, kind of let their emotions get the best of them. But there is a huge difference between someone who is erratic and like, you know, kind of nutty and, you know, things get the best of them. And and someone who's playing porn and someone who is cruel, someone who is like, no, show me how you're being sodomized right now. Show me, show me, show me.
That's abuse. That's abuse.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying to you is like, yes, we've all had these moments. We've all had these, and he's trying to play it all off as I'm human. Hey, you know, this is life. This happens. You know, things happen and on sets and he did a lot of this kind of thing of like, you know, some people worked for me that liked me and some people didn't and some people this and some people that. And it was like, hold on a second, Dan, you know, there are people that were interviewed for this documentary who didn't even want their faces shown. Like they are that concerned about this. Mm-hmm. Like they are that scared. There are people that work for you that, like that Victoria Jackson, like, right? Victoria Justice. I've forgotten her name. She doesn't even want to respond. Like she doesn't want to say anything. But, right. So there's people that are afraid to even talk about it today. That is not, hey, I'm not everyone's cup of tea. That's my point.
Yeah. Well, another thing he uses as an excuse is he said, well, Nickelodeon signed off on all of this.
Yes.
You know, they signed off on every episode. It had to go, you know, in front of whatever, you know, review board or, you know, whoever gives the final stamp of approval. And so therefore he's not really responsible because if Or he could be saying, well, there couldn't have been anything wrong with it because they didn't think there was anything wrong with it. But anyway, it's the typical, like, it's not my fault. I'm the victim. Someone else approved this. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry if I
kind of
qualified apology, non-apology. Yeah, he's not apologizing for anything. No,
he's not doing shit. And that's that whole thing. So it's like, okay, so if truly, you know, and I don't know the ins and outs of how all of this stuff gets signed off of, like, what all of that means, like, who exactly is signing off on all of these things. But I also think that it is somebody who is also, whomever's signing off is also somebody who wants to keep their job, who's also somebody who is, you know, in there trying to keep the peace and keeping their job. And, you know, I also think that probably there were a lot of creepo guys that were above Dan that were like,
they thought it was funny.
They thought it was funny. I'm sure they did. And I think they liked the fact that these young girls were in bikinis and cum shots were coming in their face. They liked watching Ariana Grande get water squirted on her face. And so that's the thing. Yeah, Dan, they signed off on it because they're just as fucked up and creepy as you. You piece of shit.
Yeah.
So fuck you, Dan. I'm putting you on my slap farm with Jeff from Twin Flames, Cody Brown, and who else is on my farm? I think there are a few other people.
What happens on a slap farm?
You pay an admission and you can just slap these people upside their heads. Not punching them, but just like, boom, just like, God damn it, shut up. Like every time they say something stupid, you can just be like, God damn it, shut up. I'm so sick of you. I'm trying to think who else I had on there. I'm sure there was some other people from the Twin Flames guy, like, sticks in my mind, but we've watched quite a few documentaries, maybe someone from the Jerry Falwell one or something. Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Jerry Falwell Jr.
Jr. He might be one.
A lot of
there's Hollywood, been some other
a lot
ones.
Of Hollywood people.
Yeah. Lots of that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Wow.
God, I mean, it's
nothing sacred.
Nothing is sacred. Nothing, and
I mean, you know, Nickelodeon, you know, Disney, you know, none of it, you know, nothing, nobody's safe.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like you ask the question of, like, can anyone be a child star? And I think that that's the part that is really hard. Like, you know, it's almost like you kind of have to have this situation where, almost like Natalie Portman, right? Where you kind of have to get into it and you have to have really normal, like, and I don't even know, maybe she's not normal. I don't know. But like, it's almost like you have to have really, really sane parents that also have careers of their own, that can also then take time off from their careers to watch you. And then you have to be very lucky that everybody that surrounds you is really up and on it and cares about you. And then, and you have to make sure that you have a good head on your shoulders and that you don't have a drug and alcohol problem. Like, so many things have to just land just right for you to be able to escape this.
Yeah, I think the key is having sane parents, because as we've seen, a lot of the parents of these kids are not. And I know, like, Natalie Portman, you mentioned her. I think her father is like a college professor. Like, people who really don't want their kids to be doing this, but they can't really stop them. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, okay. And I remember hearing about Leonardo DiCaprio's mom. She basically, she quit her life, quit her job, everything, and just stayed with him 24/7 and took him to every audition, to everything, was always with him. You have to have this hyper, hyper vigilant parent, and or a parent that is really not into it. And somehow, you're able to, escape whatever. But yeah.
But the flip side of it is, right, that one kid, I keep forgetting his name, but that one kid whose mom was actually, I think, doing the right thing by saying, hey, you know, is this okay? Or, hey, you know, this.
They got fired.
They get fired. And so that's the thing. It's a little bit of, that's the piece of it for Leonardo DiCaprio and some of these other people that sort of make it through, is they were lucky enough to be on sets where either their parents stood up and they were listened to, or they didn't have to. And that's the other flip side of it. Or the parents stood up and they left and they still kept getting jobs. And so that's the other part of it too, is, you know, I mean, obviously Leonardo DiCaprio, Natalie Portman, they're both very good actors. So you have to be a really good actor. You know, you want to keep, you have to keep working and being someone that is wanted, but the, what it takes like for you to kind of make that happen for yourself is so much. Yeah. It's so much.
And the odds of it coming out good or not in your favor, just put it that way.
But I mean, look at Drake Bell. His father was exactly, you know, he absolutely was supportive and cared. And the minute he saw something he thought was bad, he said something, he didn't like it, you know, and he went to the mother and said, okay, but whatever you do, don't let this happen. You know, I mean, the dad did everything he was supposed to do. The dad absolutely, like, every step of the way, and it still happened. And so that's the part that is so hard, is like, even when you, I mean, should the dad have like been even more forceful?
He could have, you know, tried to get custody. I can't remember.
Well, I guess you're right. I guess he could have fought legally.
Yeah, I can't remember how, I don't think he was eight, that Drake was 18 when that happened, but the father made a comment that basically he was old enough that he felt like he couldn't really do anything about it. But it's like, no, you can. He's still a minor. You can go to court and, you know, you can try to get full custody. He was, because it didn't seem like the mom was very, I don't know. I got the impression that she wasn't really into it, or, you know what I mean? She wasn't really on to what was happening or paying attention.
Yeah, well, mom was fine with him sleeping guy's house.
Exhibit A. Yeah, the mom was not. The mom was not on her game, because I'm sorry, would never let my teenager sleep at any adult's house. You know, just the two of them. I mean, no. Who would do that? I mean, I don't even. I didn't even like going. My kid going to slumber parties. I don't know who's in that house. You know, I would always discourage. I hate slumber parties. I think they're so. And it turns out
no one's doing it anymore.
That people don't do it. A tremendous amount of abuse happens at slumber parties, because you might like the family and you might know the parents, but you don't know who else is there. There's an older brother. There's some guy who comes over, some friend, some uncle, some whatever. So no,
you know, you never sleep well, because you have to sleep on the floor, or you're sleeping in someone's bed with them, and you're up late and you're in someone else's house, and there's always weird rules and they have like maybe a weird pet, or, you know,
it's not,
you don't need to be sleeping at someone else's house.
There's absolutely no reason in the world to be doing that. I always discourage sleepovers. And yeah, and then the next day, the kid's all tired and cranky. And then, you know, it's like, oh, this is great. This is how I want to spend my Saturday. Cranky kid. So, yeah, no sleepovers. No thank you.
Yeah. Oy, what a doozy of a documentary. But, you know, hopefully, I don't know. Hopefully things are different now. I mean, I don't know what Nickelodeon is like now. I have no idea what's even on the air now there. But because all my son watches is YouTube. I don't know. What was I going to say? And what is Dan Schneider even doing now? I mean, he looks terrible. He looks just awful. And I mean, what does this guy do all day long? I mean, that's what I'm really wondering about. Like, how do you just, I mean, is he trying to write scripts? Is he trying to have meetings with people? Like, it must be so sad.
Like hustling and scamming people, probably.
Yeah.
Who knows? But I don't know. Are we ever going to get to a point in our lives where, you know, we've evolved enough that this stuff just doesn't keep happening? I don't know. Humans are just...
I don't know. Because the thing is that... You know, it's these people that are in power that they don't get that it is such a responsibility They don't get that it is such a huge...
Well, because they're there for the wrong reasons. They're there
because they are.
They want to be around young people that they can, you know, have control over and take advantage of. And yeah, they're not there for the right reasons. Anyone who's there for the right reasons is going to, you know, want things to be done correctly.
Yeah. Well, but I also think that Dan Schneider saw him, I don't think that Dan Schneider saw himself the way in which he should have, which is, I think he saw himself as like, I'm a funny guy, I'm a writer, and I do this creative show, and I'm a creative guy, and here I am. It's like, really, no, it's like, no, you were a boss, you're a leader,
you're not one of the kids, you're in charge,
you're part, yeah. you set the tone and the angle of the set, and you are the protector, and that's what you need to do. And I think that ultimately is the problem. So if he had, you know, higher self-esteem, and I think he has low self-esteem. I think he's a covert narcissist myself. It's just my take. But I think that if he had a different viewpoint of himself, I think a lot of things would be very, very different. I think he would have approached it differently. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing, right? My job, I have a lot of power over people. I could really like slowly manipulate people if I wanted to. I could really fuck people up. And so, you know, that's the thing. You have to take what you do and how you interact with people very seriously and take that power seriously. And that's what it's going to take.
Yeah, well, you're thinking 10 steps beyond what any of these people are thinking. These people are just out for their own satisfaction, their own, yeah, you know, impulses, their own whatever. And anyway.
It's what we don't feel like we're enough. That's the problem. This will not end until we all feel like we are enough.
So I guess
that's the solution.
It's never going to end.
That's the answer.
We're never going to get to that place. But anyway, thanks so much.
I'll always have a job. And so will you.
Yes.
We'll always have jobs.
As long as people keep fucking up. Wow.
Yeah, we will be employed.
We'll always be working. So yes. Anyway, when the last episode comes out, maybe we'll talk about it, you know, briefly.
Yeah, I didn't realize there was one more.
Yeah, we'll see how good it is. But anyway, thank you so much for joining us. And again, like we said at the top of the show, please support our podcast if you're so inclined. And we're also on social media at Psych Legal Pop on Instagram and TikTok. You can go there and, you know, find some funny reels or, you know,
whatever, listen to
whatever
us.
We got going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you can also email us at psychlegalpoppodcast@gmail.com.
Yes.
With whatever. Yeah. Again, if you're so inclined.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. See you.
Spread the word of Psych Legal Pop. And yeah, we'll see you all next time.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited-edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.